Hello all, and welcome to episode 94 of the Man to Man NBA Show podcast. Today, we have a very, very special episode, but a very unique episode to say the least. I'll get into that in a little bit, but first I gotta tell you about BetMGM, because that's who today's episode is brought to you by. BetMGM, another betting app of the many we have used in the past. I could say BetMGM is our personal favorite. It is offering a first-time user promo with a super easy bet. Put $10 down and win a cool $200 for whatever team you bet on, simply scoring a touchdown. That's as easy as it gets. $10 down on the Bucks, the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Raiders, anybody you want, $10 down, cool $200 if they score a touchdown. And that's your money to use to bet on bigger and better things. Does not get much better than that. If you want to use this awesome deal, go ahead and use the link in any of our social media bios, at Man to Man Podcast. Get yourself some free betting money. We got some NFL playoffs coming up, the rest of the NBA season. You're going to want to have that money in your account to be a part of the fun and in on the action. Use the BetMGM first-time user promo. That is BetMGM. They are a proud partner of the Man to Man Podcast. We're happy to be working with them. Go win yourself some money and support the show while you do it. And now that that's out the way, I will explain why this is a unique episode. This is a unique episode because while that name is Man to Man, that is a bit of a lie today, because today is a JP solo pod. Andy and Liam have a big slate of things to do this week, including a very special interview. You will not want to miss it. It's going to be with a special guest. I don't want to spoil who it is, but it's one of the bigger interviews we've ever had. They've been working on that very hard. The lifestyle episode's going to be popping off this week. Make sure you're part of it. But that is what they're focused on. That's what they're working on. And that leaves me to hold down the NBA fort, which I'm happy to do. While we're getting into it, I can say this is my first time really ever doing a solo pod. I'm going to try to make sure we cover all my bases, but please feel free to hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, whatever you choose, and tell me whether I sucked, whether you like this. Hit us up on the at Man to Man Podcast social media. Say more of if you want to see more of this by any chance, or if you never want to see this again. I understand either way. So while we get into the JP solo pod, it is a good day in the NBA to have things to talk about, because today, as I record, it's Sunday. You'll hear this on Monday. So for you, it'll be yesterday. But for me, it is Klay Day, which is Klay Thompson's first game back in the NBA in over two full seasons. I saw a tweet today that said Klay has not played since when coronavirus wasn't a thing, which is insane to think about, but it's the truth. Klay has been down with a plethora of injuries, a knee injury, Achilles injury, really for over 900 days, which is a long, long time for an NBA player, especially a guy like Klay who was really just never hurt. He was kind of an Iron Man up until these last few years. And him not being in the NBA has been really, really sad, because he's such an incredible player. He has all the talent in the world. I think the best jump shot, pure jump shot of all time. Anybody who's learning to shoot a basketball should just try to mimic that 100 times over. I love Klay Thompson. I think he's a great two-way player, and he's back. As of the time I'm recording this, his game has not started yet. But when you hear this, he will have already played. And I'm just going to say that he had a great game. He probably played about 25 minutes, knocked down some threes. It was just the Bay Area crowd was super excited to have him back. And I'm sure it was awesome. But I'm sure we will talk more about that next week when everybody's back and Klay has played a full week of games. In the meantime, though, we can say that the Warriors getting Klay Thompson back is quite scary. And it's something that we've talked about all year. The fact that this Warriors team is top of the West, second of the West right now, but right up there with the Suns. They've been playing great ball, even with Steph slowing down a little bit. He's been in the worst cold streak of his entire career, and they just find ways to win games. The Warriors are really, really good. They're bringing back an incredible player, easy top 100 player in the history of the NBA, a guy who will come back and shoot 42% from three, space the floor for him, play great defense, even coming off an injury. The Klay Thompson return for the Warriors is scary for the rest of the NBA and great for us as fans. So that's all we got on Klay Day. I'm sure we'll have more to talk about next week after we see a full week of his play. But it's a time to celebrate for every NBA fan. Now, typically after the little intro part of the pod, we do a trivia question, but Andy handles the trivia questions. So I'm not going to give myself a trivia question. That doesn't make any sense. So in exchange for a trivia question this week, I'm going to talk about something that I really like in the NBA, and it's something that I think flies under the radar a little bit in the NBA just because the NBA is almost entirely a reality show now, which is awesome. It's great for fans. It truly is a year-round sport when they're not playing. We got free agency. We got trade talk. We got draft. It's great. But as a fan of the NBA and just a fan of basketball in general, I want to talk about the idea that there is no defense played in the NBA, which I think when you talk to kind of casual fans, people who don't really follow the NBA, that is like their number one quarrel with NBA is that, oh, these guys, you know, they don't play basketball because they don't play defense. It's all offense. How are these teams scoring 120 points? Yada, yada, yada. And I will say, to an extent, I understand that. I understand where you're coming from. And if you just watch the NBA without really understanding what's going on, as a lot of people do, just because basketball is a complicated sport, you may think that way. You may think these guys aren't playing defense. And I don't think it's that at all. Sure, some of these guys take possessions off. But if you were going to play 82 professional basketball games of the year plus playoffs, you'd have to take some possessions off too. But the reason the NBA, and if you are a full-time NBA fan, I'm sure you'll agree with me, but this is even, you can just take some of these points and bring them back to these people you talk about where it's like, oh, they don't play defense, yada, yada, yada. This is just what I've gathered can kind of help bridge that gap. Something to talk about is the fact that NBA offenses are so incredibly good that it can make really good defense look like no defense at all. Take Kevin Durant, for example. Guys have been trying to figure out how to guard Kevin Durant forever, his entire career. I remember a few years back when the Warriors were playing the Clippers, and guys like Lou Will, Pat Bev, they were in these press conferences, and people were asking them, which seems like a dumb question, but it is a question that you have to ask as a reporter, how do you stop Kevin Durant? And Pat Bev and Lou Will both looked at the reporter and said, I don't know. How do you stop Kevin Durant? Do you have an idea? Please tell me if you do. The truth of the matter is there is no way to stop Kevin Durant, just like there's no way to stop NBA offenses 100% of the time. NBA offenses are really, really damn good. They have literal dozens upon dozens of coaches and video analysts and the players themselves and outside consultants and correspondents they use to design their offenses to score against defenses. To say defense isn't being played is short-sighted because the offense is just that good. And not to say that they don't have these analysts for this defense. Of course they do. But it's just how it goes. They are, and not to say that these teams, even the best teams in the league, still don't really shoot 50% from the field. The defense is working over half the time. That's pretty damn good. When you think about how good these guys are at basketball, in an open gym, these NBA players, they shoot minimum 70%. And then you throw a defense out there, and if you shoot 40%, 50% for a game, that's pretty damn good. There is so much defense being played. They're incredible. The best defenders in the world play in the NBA. Don't let anybody tell you different. That is a fact. If you can play incredible defense, you can play in the NBA. There is so much little things that go into it. It's guarding off of, it's, do you blitz off a high screen? Do you guard the back cut? Do you take your chances on a double team? When is it worth a trap in the corner, or are you just going to play man up? And all these things are happening in a 24-second shot clock. It is fascinating to watch defense. And if you truly do not believe defense is being played, I would ask you to watch the game in a different way. Don't watch the ball handler all the time. Watch what's going on off ball. Watch what's happening everywhere else on the court besides at the top of the key. So that's just my little rundown on it. You know, usually we have a trivia question here. And again, like I said, it doesn't make any sense for me to give myself a trivia question. So I just want to talk a little bit about that, riff a little bit about that. And hopefully, you know, maybe that gives you an idea of something to say to somebody if they ever bring that up, if you're ever in that discussion, or if you feel that way, maybe just a little change of opinion to bring you away from, oh, they don't play defense. Of course they play defense. It's half the game and they play it pretty damn well when you look at it from a little different point of view. Now, one game that there will need to be a lot of defense played in because there's going to be a lot of offensive firepower is my game of the week this week. It is on Wednesday night. It is the Charlotte Hornets at the Philadelphia 76ers. The Charlotte Hornets, I mean, what's to say? They're dynamic. They're young. They're high flyers. They're really good. But they're right in a playoff fight in the East. No guarantees they make the playoffs. And that's because with COVID, they've been up and down a little bit. They're starting to find their stride again. But the East is tough this year, and going against a team like the Sixers, who is who will be making the playoffs. They're really finding their stride right now at a good time. Big Joe, Joel Embiid's playing his way into MVP conversation. Both teams are playing well right now, but the Sixers are stupid hot. I'm not a fan of either of these teams. I enjoy watching them, but I have no real skin in the game. And so just as a third-party fan, the question I have for this game is who's going to guard Joel Embiid. I'm going to take the Sixers. Probably money line, just because I don't really trust those points. But I'm probably going to take Sixers money line. I think Big Joe has a big game, and I think the Hornets come out of Philly with a loss. However, when it comes down to it, if these two teams play in a playoff in a seven-game series, yeah, maybe you can't guard Big Joe for four games. I don't know. I'd love to see it, but for right now, I'm taking the Sixers. Liam and Andy, you do not have games of the week this week, obviously, because they're not here. I did hit on my game of the week this most recent week. I took the Bulls spread versus the Wizards at home. They won by 12. The spread was about 5.5. So I'm now 2-2 and 1-0 in my last one. So that's all that really matters, you know? What can you do for me now kind of league? So, and now with man-to-man worthy, I usually throw it to all the other guys, but because it's just me, I pick some things I really want to talk about. And I'm going to assume these are all man-to-man worthy because I like to talk about all of them. So I'll spoilers out already. Every single one of these is going to be man-to-man worthy. So just a little preparation there. But to start, Kyrie Irving has officially played this season, and he honestly looked pretty damn good in a win over the Pacers. He can still only play in away games. New York is certainly not bringing their vaccination policies. They're not backtracking them. So Kyrie Irving, as long as he won't get vaccinated, is not going to be able to play in any home games or any games in New York for that matter, or California, I believe. I'm not entirely sure the rules on that one, but he definitely won't be able to play in New York. Is this even still worth talking about is the question I think that is presented to me, Andy and Liam when they're here, and just kind of the basketball media as a whole, is we know that Kyrie's probably not going to get the shot. Even come playoff time, he's probably not going to come get the shot. So is this even worth talking about? Or at this point, is it just what it is? Is it like a guy who can't play in Canada for whatever reason? And then the fact is, that's just how it is at this point. Kyrie Irving is really good. When the Nets have him in the lineup, they're really, really good. James Harden has not been the James Harden that he always is. He'll say he's trying to get into shape. I think it's just the fact that this team isn't designed to play entirely around him like the Rockets team was. So it's making it a little harder on him. With Kyrie running this offense, after taking off months of playing basketball, he was definitely working out, but months of playing in games, he came in and just looked perfect. It looked like he had never left this offense. It's a shame we don't get to watch this on a nightly basis, but I think it's just how it is. I think it's not really even, honestly, at this point, past this next week, depending on how he plays. The Nets are going on a road stretch here, so we're going to see a lot of Kyrie, and we'll see how really good they are with him. But they talking as if Kyrie is going to be able to, is somehow miraculously going to change his stance, and the Nets are going to become this absolute wagon powerhouse. I don't think it's worth it because I don't think it's going to happen. And in the playoffs, if all of a sudden the Nets coming down to it are looking really good with Kyrie and not so good without him, and they draw a tough first round matchup, it's obviously New York law is New York law, New York rule is New York rule, but the NBA is going to have to figure something out. Because if you want the best players on the court in the most watched games, Kyrie Irving has to be in this game. He has to be in those games, or else it's not going to be the same. Watching Kevin Durant dominate is a lot of fun, but people turn the TV on for Kyrie. The way he's been able to be his best finisher probably in the history of basketball at his size. His handle is insane. The shot is still good. You need Kyrie on the TV. And if you're the NBA, I think you know that. So that's a conversation to have in the future. But for right now, this just is how it is. And we'll get to keep watching him play it on road games. And I guess we'll just be happy about that. The Phoenix Suns, first to 30 wins. They got there last week. Congrats to the Suns. So I saw a stat. It was like the most wins in a 365-day period, so 1 year. Or maybe it was just in a calendar year, something to that extent. And the Suns were like the third most of all time behind some really, really good teams like the Bulls and the Warriors, and in being this just last in 2021. And that is something to celebrate. It really is. I mean, runner up last year to a really good Bucks team. They had a lead for a team that has been. We used to say they were overperforming, but now they're just good. They're not overperforming. They've been able to do it consistently night in, night out. Now, the game after they got 30 wins, they turned around and immediately lost to the Heat, who are injured and have a lot of COVID. They shot them out the gym. It was 123 to 100, I believe. And so now the Suns are at 30-9 with 39 games played. They'll have just a little bit over 40 games left to go. And now the question arises, are the Suns a 60-win team? Mathematically, if they keep on this exact path they're going, if they don't go on any cold stretches, they don't get super hot all of a sudden again, although to be fair, they were super hot at one point when they won how many ever in a row, but that we'll say if they somehow keep on this trend, that would get them to 60 wins, just barely. They'd be right around 61, 62. I don't think it happens. I think that they don't have that hot stretch in them again, or they can't. They won't have that ability to keep that sort of winning trajectory. So I think they probably end up right around like 55, which is, again, this is an incredible season. To go 55 and whatever that'd be, 55-17, excuse me, is pretty incredible. Most teams will never even sniff that. But in the West, I'm not sure 55 wins gets you to the one seed is the problem. It would so many years in the past, but recently 55 wins is not enough. And I really don't think it'll be enough with this Warriors team. When they bring Klay back, the 55 wins, it's going to be a race to 60, and then 60 gets you the one seed. Granted, is the 1-2 seed in the West in the current playoff format that different? Probably not. The play-in games, makes it a little more interesting. But everybody wants to be the one seed. You want to have the one seed. You want to always have home court advantage, at least on your side of the bracket. And every team wants to be the one. It's just how it is. And typically, one seeds do pretty damn good in the NBA playoffs. So, are the Suns a 60-win team? I don't think so. Probably not. Are they a 55-win team? Probably. Is 55 enough to get you the one seed? I don't know. So, we'll see. It's going to be a hell of a battle. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I'm super excited to watch them come down. And I think something that's going to have to come up with the Suns here is just, can they stay healthy? Devin Booker's back from his injury. Chris Paul has always been a bit of an Iron Man, but you know, sometimes every once in a while he misses a few games here and there. If they have a stretch where they have, of their starting five, maybe two guys are out. Maybe it's, you know, Book and Aiden, or maybe it's Paul and Mikal Bridges can't get fully healthy. Then they're going to slip. They have to slip. They're a deep team. They're not that deep. And then we're looking at 50 wins. You know, then you're looking at a 3 seed or a 4 seed, and then it's all of a sudden, holy shit, you get the Clippers in the first round, and you don't really want to play the Clippers, or you get who knows in the first round. All of a sudden, one of the hottest teams in basketball, you got to play them, and it's a tough spot to be in. So it's a race. I think the Suns, as good as they are, have a very, very uphill battle in front of them. Now, going from the West, going out to the East, and from a team that's playing great to a team that has not been playing so great, the Boston Celtics head coach Ime Udoka, criticized his team for lack of mental toughness after an atrocious blown lead loss to the Knicks. Evan Fournier put up a 40 bomb on you. Come on now. Talked about needing a calming presence on the team when time gets tough. Now, I know he meant a player, but isn't that your job as the head coach to be the calming presence for your team, to make sure your team is mentally tough and probably not go whining to the press about it? I don't know. That's just me. I don't really get it. Udoka is a first-time head coach. I get it. But I don't see the point in going and complaining to the press and saying, we need to be this when you are the man in charge. How about you make it that way? I don't know. That is, for me, it was a tough read. And I understand what he's saying. I think he's asking for one of his leaders, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, somebody to come up and realize, hey, somebody has to say something in these huddles. That's not, come on, boys, we got to figure it out. Maybe it's just, hey, guys, we're okay. Let's go out there and execute these next couple plays, which you do need on a team. And you need guys on the court that can do that. However, as a head coach, you should be taking some responsibility for that. And he does, but was not a good look, in my opinion. Brad Stevens, as the front office man, will certainly have something to say about it. As an outside fan, tough to see, and as I'm sure as Celtics fans feel the same way. But beyond all that, because that is a one-time thing, and the news cycle will go past it very soon. What is wrong with the Celtics team? They have so much talent, and they're just not winning games. The blown loss lead to the Knicks was insane. I mean, there's no way around it. It was really bad. But if you're the Celtics here, and you're the GM, you're Brad Stevens, or you're Ime Udoka, or you're anybody, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, you have to realize things are not good. There is a problem, and it's not... It's deep in the roots here. There is Jason Tatum the guy? I don't know. I think he is. I think he's got the scoring talent to be. Is Jaylen Brown the second best player on a championship team? Not right now, he's not. I mean, some people would argue Jaylen Brown's the best player on the team. In which case, then you have to ask yourself, is Jason Tatum the second best player on a championship team? The truth is, I don't think so. Neither of those guys. They could both be... I think both those guys could be in the future the second best player on a championship team, but not with the Celtics roster they have right now. Dennis Schroeder at point guard, it's not working. It's just not. It was a little bit of a stretch to begin with. They have too many ball-dominant guys. Al Horford's a fine center, but he's not a game-changer. Marcus Smart, same guy he's always been. It really helps your team, but he's not going to push it to a deep playoff run or anything like that. The Celtics have problems, and it's in their roster makeup. And as good as Jason Tatum can be, as good as Jaylen Brown can be, the problems run deeper. So I think there has to be some changes made. A team that I would look for to be possibly making some trades with the Celtics here coming up soon would be a team like the Nuggets. A team that's a kind of low playoff, have a superstar who really needs a change, could, you know, bring in some help for Jokic. Jaylen Brown and Jokic on the same court. My goodness, that sounds absolutely scary for everybody else. We'll see. Some more Nuggets talk coming up soon, but that would be something that I think would be absolutely outstanding. Not that I'm saying either team is going to make a trade with each other, but that is something I would look for. I have absolutely no sources on that, but just something I've been thinking about. So yeah, the Celtics, there's some deep seated issues. You got to go to team therapy, you know. Somebody's got to sit down and look at the rest of the team and say we got to make some changes here. So look out for Boston to be making some changes. And yeah, that's all I got on the Celtics. Hopefully they can change it around, or we might be seeing Tatum and Brown in some different colors besides the green and white here soon. MVP ladder, not super MVP talk season yet, although I think this is a very good example of you can't win the MVP before the All-Star break, but you can certainly lose it. LeBron trending upwards, coming off the injury. He's been playing out of his mind for the Lakers. I mean, LeBron, if he's not the GOAT, he's number two, and he's been absolutely hooping recently, scoring the most he has in his recent career. Big Joe in Philly, for a team that is, again, overperforming a little bit. Joel Embiid's been awesome on both sides of the court. He always just the same player he is when he's healthy. He always has been. He's a really, really fun guy to watch out the post, which there's only a couple of those in the league right now. So, yeah, LeBron and Joel Embiid trending up. But if somebody's trending up, that means somebody has to be trending down. And as we alluded to earlier, it is Steph Curry. Steph, ever since breaking the record, and even a little bit before breaking the all-time threes record and hitting 3,000 threes, it's just, he's cold. There's something about it. It's not there. And granted, cold for Steph is still pretty good compared to everybody else, but the offense has not been flowing as it was at the beginning of the year for the Warriors. Steph's not making his shots. Guys don't have to press up on him as much as they think. And as great as the Warriors have been, if this continues to be a problem, it's going to be a big deal. We saw with the Cavs series a few years back, with the one that they lost, when Steph's shot isn't there, that the rest of the offense, because there is so much gravity to Steph and because the ball runs through Steph so much, when he's not shooting that 40% clip, the rest of the offense can break down. And I don't think that'll be the case. I think Steph's getting it out of the way now. He's sitting tonight, or sat recently, probably playing tonight, I'd imagine, with Clay. But just trying to get that little bit of the weight off. Take a break, maybe take a week off here soon. Come the All-Star break, he'll be an All-Star. So I'll take the All-Star break to kind of hang out, maybe get in that three-point contest, work on the stroke a little bit, and he'll come back. Is it enough to put himself back at the top of the MVP ladder? Probably not. I don't think so. I think that is probably gone for Steph at this point, especially with Klay coming back. That'll probably hurt Steph's chances a little bit. Guys like Jokic, Giannis, KD at the top right now are pretty firm, with LeBron and Big Joe pushing their way up. But Steph is what once looked like a runaway year for Steph is certainly not going to be the case. And I think the Warriors would certainly trade and Steph another MVP for a championship if that's what it ends up being. But yeah, I don't think Steph's really an MVP candidate at the moment anymore, just because of how it's been going. But if he turns it around right now and by the All-Star break, he's back to Steph Curry standards, I may be eating my words. But at the moment, I don't think so. He's probably fallen back out of the top five right now. I would probably put KD, Jokic, Giannis, LeBron, and Joel Embiid in front of him at the moment. We will see. Can't win it right now, but can certainly lose it. For LeBron and Joel Embiid, what would it take from the Lakers and the Sixers for these guys to be in legitimate contenders? As we know, as much as this is an individual award, there is always a team aspect to it. First off, your team has to make the playoffs, which I think the Lakers and Sixers both will, although the Lakers are making it interesting. The lowest recent seed we saw was Russ with the Thunder in his triple-double year. They were a 6 or a 7 seed bottom half, and that was when Russ did something that nobody's done in literal decades. So I don't think we will see that be the case this year. It's going to require either one of these Lakers or Sixers jumping up into the top half of their playoffs and really dominating down the stretch, I think, for LeBron or Joel Embiid, just with how good everybody else has played. Giannis has been absolutely absurd for a good Bucks team. Jokic kind of falls into the same trap here, although, you know, the analytics and the advanced statistics will tell you that Jokic is the best player in the league by far. But at the end of the day, we all know that's not what everybody votes on. So I'll say Jokic definitely needs kind of the same thing. The Nuggets are going to need to step up and they're going to need to absolutely fall into that top half, or else it's going to be KD and Giannis in a pretty much 1-2 battle. That's about all I got on MVP. Guys outside that, any guy that I haven't talked about, the chance at winning MVP, DeMar DeRozan, but probably not, although he has been hooping recently. I think the pretty standard top five, top six has already been solidified, and I doubt we see anybody outside of that making a run for it. Speaking a little bit of the Nuggets are one of the first teams to make a trade. The deadline is coming up in February, but the stove's heating up just a little bit, about a month out. Bol Bol, who I must say is one of the most fascinating prospects in NBA history, is free from being buried on the Nuggets bench. He has been traded from the Denver Nuggets to the Detroit Pistons, going from cold to cold there, I must say, but going to the Pistons, and the Pistons sent to the Nuggets in exchange Rodney Magruder, rotational guard, and a second round pick, which seems just super cheap for someone with Bol's upside. I mean, this is a guy who's 7'1", has like a 7'7 wingspan, can shoot it. Yeah, he's skinny as a rail, but if you watch the highlights, there's certainly some talent there. On a team as bad as the Pistons, Bol's going to be playing a ton, I'd imagine. I don't see why they won't experiment with him. Him and Cade Cunningham, I mean, the Pistons are working their way to be able to run a pretty massive starting lineup with Cade Cunningham, Sadiq Bey, Bol Bol, guys like that, just going to be huge across the top. I'd imagine Jeremy Grant gets dealt here soon, but that's kind of the point. The Pistons are tanking a little bit. So the question for me is that, is this Bol Bol trade, is this a Thon Maker situation where the upside never presents itself and everybody's like, oh, but if you throw him in a trade, he could be this, this, and this, and then he just never turns into that? Or are we about to see a major leap with some more time? And obviously, it'll probably end up being somewhere in the middle, as all these trades do. Bol Bol will probably be like, oh, yeah, that guy is pretty good, but he's not, you know, a major piece on a championship team. But this is something that I think, as an NBA fan, everybody should be celebrating, because it just shows that Bol Bol is going to get a chance to be on a court more. We haven't really seen him play consistently since the beginning of his freshman year at Oregon before he got hurt. And when he was at Oregon, it was pretty damn cool watching this guy move on a basketball court. I remember watching him in a scrimmage in the bubble when the Nuggets were playing tall ball with five bigs. And just, yeah, he was so raw and he was pissing off Michael Malone left and right. But just seeing the guy, you're like, that is incredible. He is so cool on the basketball court. So I am super excited to see Bol Bol play more. His upside's insane. The potential is through the roof. I am amped up, and I hope we see him play for the Pistons a lot. It'll make the Pistons must-watch TV, I can assure you that, in which they are absolutely not right now. Although Cade Cunningham is very, very good. So that's all I got for man-to-man worthy. I would say that we're about to reach what I like to call kind of the dog days of the season. There's the few weeks leading up to the All-Star break and then the few weeks after where there a lot of teams are still fighting themselves. They're figuring it out, and players are just kind of trying to get through it. They're trying to get to vacation, then they're trying to get to the playoffs. And so scores can be a little eh, games can be a little eh, but that's why we got trade deadline. That's why we got All-Star break. That's why we got, and then the final run to the playoffs, which is going to be super tight this year, it's looking like. So hopefully some more interesting stories coming up when I have my boys back and we can rip off of it. But yeah, that's how we're feeling right now. So about the halfway mark of the episode, about two thirds, I do want to talk about the All-Star game because it's coming up, and All-Star voting has been consistently going on for about a week and a half. Kyrie Irving has more votes than Fred VanVleet, stuff like that. Classic fan vote stuff, but it's just cool to watch. But I do want to talk about right now, I think something that we're going to work on as a team, as a man-to-man team, is a All-Star Eliminator Challenge, which is basically we're going to go through and we're going to try to guess who will be the 24 All-Stars. And the odds of us guessing all 24 is pretty insane. I don't think that would ever happen. So just because when it comes down to it, the difference between guys that are like 18th to 24th to 28th to 30th in the league are just so, so tight. So that'll never happen. And part of why it's good for us that it'll never happen, that we will never guess all 24, is because it allows for the competition. And it's pretty easy to guess who the starters will be, or guys who are kind of like immediates right after the starters, kind of the 1 through 15 area. That is where I'll take over. I'll probably try to guess the first 8 here today, talk about them a little bit. And then when the guys are back in, we'll have them guess. And whoever has the first person to guess somebody who isn't an All-Star, there'll be a punishment. Whoever guesses the most or doesn't get any wrong, there'll be a reward. We haven't decided that yet, but that is just coming up in the next few weeks, just as a heads up to you, the viewer and listener at home. But while it's just me here, and because this part wouldn't be really much of a competition, I'll talk about who I think are probably the first 8 guys who are just absolutely guaranteed All-Stars. And I've actually already talked about a few of them because a lot of these guys are pretty high in the MVP conversation. But it's always fun to highlight these superstars because they are that good. We have some of the best superstars in the league history right now. So I'll start off with my number one, who I would put as my number one vote for the All-Star break this year. If I had a vote, obviously I don't. But for the All-Star game, my number one vote so far would be Kevin Durant. I think he has been the best player in the league so far. He's been the best offensive player, best scoring threat in the league for many years now. There's never been a player like him. He's a 7-foot combo guard with one of the deepest bags. Watching him sprint down and shoot a fadeaway mid-range jumper over literally everybody in the league for a bucket 75% of the time is pretty cool. It's awesome to see a guy like that. He with the Nets, the rest of the roster being made up of what feels like gum and tape sometimes, he's just been consistent, and he's a threat to go off for 40 any night. The shot's absolutely gorgeous. He's been carrying the Nets sometimes, although he deferred to rookie Cam Thomas, to get him the bucket for the win tonight. But that's also part of being a leader on a team, is knowing when to defer. So I'm going to put KD as my number one vote, and I'm fairly confident he's going to be an All-Star. He'll probably be a captain, either him or Giannis, I'd imagine, out of the East. My number two vote right now would be still Steph. I think what he did the beginning part of the season cannot be overlooked. Yeah, he's been cold recently, but beginning of the year, he was the runaway best player besides maybe KD. It's still Steph Curry. He's absolutely an All-Star. He's one of the best players we've ever seen. He's certainly one of the most influential players. He should be an All-Star every single year until he retires. And he should be recognized for many years after that. He'll be assuming he's not injured or doesn't want to sit it out, he will be playing in the All-Star game. I would bet my life on it. He's my number two vote, and we'll see if he ends up participating in the 3-point contest, which he has done many times in the past. It is a point of pride for him, and it's fun to watch him shoot in 3-point contests and just realize how good he is at simply shooting a basketball with nobody defending him. But yeah, Steph would be my number two vote, and he is fun to watch in the All-Star game, watching him chuck. He's not as athletic and high-flying as some of these other guys, but when he pulls up from like 38 feet and just splashes it, it's always so cool. So Steph would be my number two vote, and I'm guessing he will be in the All-Star game. Number three would be Giannis. What can we say about Giannis that hasn't been said so many times before? Absolute freak of nature. Two-time MVP, recent finals MVP and finals champion. Giannis is really, really good at basketball, and he has the body type that just can't be matched. When he comes barreling into the lane, jumps from a foot inside the free throw line, and just reaches over massive individuals and dunks it on their heads, that is all-star basketball. That is all-star basketball to a T. He doesn't always do that in the all-star game, which is probably fair because nobody wants to get hurt, but it is so damn fun to watch. And that, obviously, I could go into the stats as well, but I don't really need to because we all know who Giannis is. We know what he can do. So Giannis would be my number three vote. And he's damn fun to watch in All-Star games. I absolutely adore it. He really tries, I think, is something that in the past few All-Star games, more players started trying with the new scoring system, which is fun and cool to see as a fan. Because in the past, you know, watching teams score almost 200 points was cool. But also you're like, I wish there was a little more effort. But Giannis always tries, and he's always a good pick for All-Star MVP for that reason. So Giannis would be on number three, and he'll be in the All-Star game. Number four for me would be Jokic, Nikola Jokic out of Denver. Reigning MVP, again, like I said earlier, the advance in the analytics would tell you that he's the best player in the league this year, which I firmly believe because the rest of this Nuggets roster, without Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., and I'm not even a huge Michael Porter Jr. guy, but without Jamal Murray, this team, it needs some help, and Jokic is that guy. Without Jokic, this team would be bottom of the West, and they're just not. They're firmly in the playoffs because of how good Nikola Jokic is. He doesn't bring the ball up the court typically. Sometimes he does in specific sets, but he gets the ball in his hands right around the 18-17 mark of the shot clock, and the rest of those 18-17 seconds are pretty much predicated on what he decides to do. Sometimes he takes the ball, passes out to the wing, immediately cuts to the post, gets the ball in the post, about 12 seconds left, faces up, takes somebody to school. Sometimes he shoots from the top of the key. Sometimes a little give and go. There's a little back cut. It's all sorts of things. And he absolutely runs that offense to the max capacity he can. And something that has been a little bit of a knock on Jokic in the past, but it's certainly not this year, is his defense has been incredible. He's been like a legitimately great rim protector, which has never been the case for Jokic. He's always been okay. Sometimes could get exposed when he took him away from the basket. Not this year. He's been playing really, really well on defense. So I obviously an MVP candidate. I would 100% understand anybody voting for him. He's incredible, and he would be probably my fourth vote for the NBA All-Star, and he will be there. That is a damn near guarantee. Fifth is where things get a little bit more interesting, but for me, I'm taking LeBron. It's been, 17 years in the league, and is just still so, so good. 18, 19 years in the league? 19? A lot of years in the league. And it's LeBron James. he's arguably putting together one of his best performances of his career when he's approaching 40 years old. What he's been able to do with this Lakers team, where the rest of the roster has just been so up and down. And the fact that he has to deal with guys like Russ and AD not playing their potential, and Melo, old ass Melo, and guys like, Malik Monk, who's a reclamation project, and Austin Reeves, who's a really good rookie, but obviously has some deficiencies when it comes to being an NBA player. LeBron doesn't care about any of that. He says, screw it. Give me whoever, and I'll go out and win these games, and I'll put up 30, 10, and 12 while I'm doing it. It's insane. It's amazing. If he keeps doing it, there's going to have to be MVP buzz for him, which if him winning an MVP in whatever season this is for him, I can't remember at this point, would be probably one of the most incredible achievements in the history of basketball. He will be an all-star. He's been an all-star for how many ever years in a row at this point. He just knows whenever all-star break is coming around that he's going to be there. honestly, if you were just trying to guarantee who would be in the All-Star game, you weren't doing this at all in a voting situation, he should be your number one bet. But I would put him at number five on my vote right now. And that's a very, very solid five. I wouldn't even say he's been the fifth best in the league this year, but that's where he ends up in my vote. Now, LeBron has been absolutely outstanding. He will be an All-Star, and he'll be the same ambassador for it that he always is. And he probably will be a captain because of the fan vote, and seeing him always draft is a good time as an NBA fan. So LeBron will be an All-Star. I would bet my life on it, and we will see him out there doing his usual thing. So that takes me to number six. And I said number five is where it gets a little messy. I would say number six is probably actually where the drop-off is. I would have to go Joel Embiid, even though he did miss a decent amount of time in the front half, but so did LeBron. So I guess I can't use that argument, but I'm going to go Joel Embiid at number six. Has been the best center in the East pretty much indisputably, which is a good enough reason to put him in. But also with the Sixers, a team that's been up and down, has dealt with so much. He's just been consistently great. He's out there talking shit to KD. He's out there dishing to his teammates. He's knocking down threes, dunking on guys, playing great defense, just being Joel Embiid. He's the same guy we always thought he was, and he is damn fun to watch. An absolute general in the paint. Just awesome. He's playing his way into MVP conversation. He's leading the Sixers team that has some deficiencies to a pretty damn good season because he's just so damn hard to guard. I really like Joel Embiid. I think he was, even early in his career, a little underappreciated, if not properly hyped. But I think he's starting to get a shine now, and he's really, really good and absolutely deserves to be an All-Star this year. I wouldn't think there's even a remote argument with that. So I will have him at six. I can see why other people may put some other people in front of him, but I have him at six, and I certainly believe he will be an All-Star. My number seven vote would be I'd probably give it to DeMar DeRozan. I in the past, and I've talked about this a little bit on the pod before, is that I don't think DeMar DeRozan is inherently a guy who helps you win a championship, because I think there are some major deficiencies in his game, but he has proven this year that that may not be the case anymore. Maybe this, at this point in his career, he's willing to just work on his strengths and use those to score a ton of buckets, in which case, awesome for the Bulls. While he was splitting top dog with LaVine earlier in the year, after the COVID bump and everything, DeMar's the guy right now for the Bulls, and he's been hooping recently. Back-to-back buzzer-beater game winners, the first time that's ever happened in NBA history. Just a guy with the Bulls right now where you put the ball in his hands and he goes and gets you a bucket. And there's just something to be said for that to be an All-Star, especially a guy who's averaging 20-whatever a game he's averaging this year. I really like what DeMar's done this year. He's going to be an All-Star. This is probably the first one where maybe not a starter just because of the East, but I think he will be. And he'll be at the game 100%. He'll be in the game. So I'm going to take DeMar as my number six and say that he will be in the game, that the All-Star game. I'm going to say this is the only one I'm not 100% sure. I guess I'll go like 95. Number seven certainly now gets a little bit more dicey when it comes down to it. But I'm going to go with because the number one teams almost always have somebody in the All-Star game. I'm going to say Devin Booker, even with the time he missed, will probably be in the All-Star game this year. He's been snubbed a couple times in the past, but because the Suns have been so good this year, I'm going to go D-Book. 23 game, not shooting as much as he has in the past, but he's starting to reach that level where there's just so much respect for him around the league that he just gets votes. Booker is a guy who, even with the little bit of time he missed, you can tell when he's on the court, damn, the Suns are really, really good. I think he and Chris Paul honestly could probably share this number seven spot. I know that's not possible, but they could do that because of how much they both influence the Suns. But I'm going to go with Booker. I think he will be at the All-Star game. Maybe not a starter, but I do believe he will be there. And he's a guy that I just want to talk about. I love what he's been doing this year. His shooting numbers are percentage-wise not as great as they could be, but that's okay because everything else he's been doing in his game has been just as good. And while we saw in the playoffs last year there are ways to neutralize him a little bit, he has gone the other way and has made it to the point that he has developed his game. He's learned with the guys around him. The guys around him are all now good enough that he can consistently dish. I would say Devin Booker should be an all-star. He would be around my number seven pick, even with the time he's missed this year. And I think he will be there. I'll probably give it around a 65 to 70% chance that he is at the all-star game. Now for number eight, which will be my last pick of the day today. I'm going to go a little bit deeper into the bag here and say that I truly, truly believe this guy will be an all-star. I don't know how widely accepted it is quite yet. And I guess just to make things interesting, this could be my guess where he doesn't quite make it, but I'm still going to put him in. I'm going to say James Harden. Now, I know I spoke earlier about that he hasn't been as good as he has in the past, which he hasn't. The numbers aren't quite there, and there's been certainly some games where he flies under the radar, but it's still James Harden. You know, I'm playing a little bit on the fan vote here, which I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know he's gotten a decent amount of fan votes. He's in a big market in Brooklyn. He's still James Harden. There's so many people that absolutely adore him, and he's still a great player. He's definitely still one of the top 15 players in the NBA. I'll take James Harden at my number eight spot. That one, again, is probably, I'm probably pushing it a little bit, but I want to make it a little interesting. So I'll take James Harden here and say, well, I'm not sure he deserves to be a starter. I think he'll have the votes and he'll get in. I think so. So that'd be James Harden, and he's my number eight. And I'll give him like a 50-50 just to make things interesting. Obviously, I could have just went with every single lock, but I don't want to do that. I want to leave some for the other guys. So that is my all-star eliminator. Makes things a little bit more interesting. We'll see about Book and Harden, but I'm putting my faith in the voters here, and we'll see. We'll see how it goes into the next few months. Those should be, the starters will be announced right around the end of January, and then the rest of the field, which will be 14 more guys, will be announced about the week before the games, probably a little bit later into February. Now that takes me to my pick to eat this week. Typically, we all have a pick to eat, and we talk about it, and we say, yeah, they're going to have a great week, this, this, and this. And I'm going to do that, but because it's just me, I'll give a little bit more detail. I will say my pick to eat this week is going to be... Actually, before I get into that, I want to talk about my last week's pick to eat, who was Donovan Mitchell, who had a pretty decent week. He played 3 out of 4 games he could have played in. He had one little rest in there, but he really shined against the Pacers with a 37.9 assist showout. I would have to say he ate last week, had another near 30-point game. Played well. He's been for the Jazz, who we don't talk a lot about the Jazz just because they're good. They're just consistently good. And even with some guys out here and there, the Rudy Gobert slander, which he doesn't seem to care about, you know, now has COVID. The Jazz are just good, and Donovan Mitchell is really good. So he was a good pick to eat. I'm proud of that one. And with that out of the way, I will talk about a guy who is actually going to play the Jazz this week. My pick to eat this week is Darius Garland, who's since coming back to the Cavs after a couple-week break, has been amazing. I mean, he's been really good for the Cavs so far this year, especially after Colin Sexton went down with an injury. The Cavs this week play the Kings, the Jazz, the Spurs, and the Thunder. I mean, good teams, a couple good teams, a couple not so good teams, but when Darius Garland has the ball in his hands, he makes things happen. And the Cavs have been good this year, the whole year, even when they play tall ball. But that allows a guy like Darius Garland, who can really dish it, can shoot it, can make things happen with the ball in his hand. When there are so many bigs, there's a lot of guys to pass it to around the rim. There's a lot of guys to set screens. There's a lot of guys to just take up space on the court for you to do your thing. So I think Darius Garland has a big week. I think the Cavs, you know what? I'll give them 3-1. I think they go 3-1 this week. And I think they keep making that pretty impressive playoff push in the East. Now, just to wrap up the show, I have another topic something that we don't really get to talk about when all the guys are here, but I want to talk about it just because it has been a little bit pressing. And that is when Steph Curry broke the record for most threes, there was a conversation that said, well, now what record's going to be broken? You know, breaking a record in the NBA, which has had a very long and storied history, is really cool, and that's why we don't see it too often. But the next question is, what is the next record we see broken? I do think this threes record will be broken at some point. Steph's going to keep extending it out, but there's so many guys chasing him, and threes are being launched at just an enormous rate. So somebody's going to catch him eventually, but it won't be for a while because Steph is still playing. So what are some records that I think actually have a chance of being broken? When will they be broke? So I do believe LeBron is going to reach Kareem's points record. Just considering how he's still playing at this point in his career, I don't see him slowing down anytime soon, I guess. I mean, he would have to eventually science and biology would have to take over. His body would break down, you'd think. But it's LeBron, so who knows? It's going to be a few years yet. It'll probably be, 5 years from now. But so that's a long time before that record's broken. But I do think it'll be broken. Do I think any record's broken in the next 5 years before that? Honestly, probably not. There's so many records that, first off, like John Stockton's assist record, that's not being touched. His steals record, probably not being touched. We don't have like your standard point guard anymore. Point guards don't pass as much as they used to. Guys don't go for steals as much as they used to because it's just not worth it more often than not. Was the Jazz bookkeeper probably doing a little home cooking? Yes, that can't happen as much anymore because how every game is broadcast to everybody and the stats are just so much more finely tuned and picked over. So those records ain't ever being broken. It's just not going to happen. Beyond that, I'm not sure there are untouchable records for full careers. Some Wilt numbers are never going to be touched, but Wilt played 48 and a half minutes per game 1 year because he only ever got taken out of one game for any sub out, and that was when he got ejected, and he played all these overtime games. That record's never going to be broken, but I'm not really counting that one. Same with like the 100-point record. I don't think anybody's going to ever score 100 points in a game again. I'm not sure we'll ever see 80 in a game again, to be honest. So I guess that brings me to my overall point, which is, and it's going to be a long time before we see another record get broke. It was quite a while since we had the last record broke before Steph. The NBA has had guys that have just been so, so good, and the game has changed so much. I don't really see us having another record broken anytime soon. I don't. And I don't think that's a sad thing. I think that's really, really cool. I think it's awesome that there are these guys and these records in the books that'll stand for so long. It's storied ground, and it also makes it even more impressive when they're broken. When LeBron breaks Kareem's record, which I think he will, it's going to be a monumentous moment in NBA history. It's going to be showing, obviously, LeBron taking over just one of the many crowns he's taken over since his time in the NBA. But I think it's going to show really that full passing of the guard, that switch from the old NBA to the new NBA. Because the Kareem record is one where every person can point to it and be like, that is old NBA history right there. That is a guy who dominated the time he played. You can't ignore that. And you can't ignore that. But when it gets overtaken, it's going to be kind of that changing, that passing of the torch that says, all right, old NBA, we got a guy who in this new NBA, where granted, offense is up, but LeBron was that good for that long. And Kareem's record, which seems so untouchable for so long, is going to get broken by LeBron James. And I think that's pretty damn cool. So I'm going to take LeBron breaking Kareem as the next record, but I don't think we see one before then. And I don't want to leave you guys hanging. Just after a quick little research I did, my 5 years estimate for LeBron breaking the record was way off. I think it'll be actually like 2 seasons because only about 2,000 points behind. So we will see one broken. At least relatively soon, but after that one broken, I don't think we see one for a long time. And I just want to shout out Kareem. That man scored 38,387 points with one career three-pointer made. LeBron has 36,170 points as of right now, and has done it with over 2,000 three-pointers made. So just it showed that the game has changed, that Kareem did it at an insane rate, but when that record is broken, it's going to be quite fascinating. And then after that, probably nothing for a long time. But that's all I got. That's all the time I got for my solo pod. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate you sticking in here till the end if you have. I don't know if I'll get the chance to do this again. I much prefer doing this with the guys, but sometimes, duty calls. So, yeah, hit us up on social media. Follow us. Please let me know how you thought this went. Again, if there is all of a sudden a demand for this, which there could be, I suppose. we can probably work this out and maybe just do like another JP 20 minute episode of the week. I don't know. So yeah, again, appreciate everybody listening in. And I'll see y'all in the next one. Make sure you check out the lifestyle episode for the incredible interview, which again, I will not spoil, but it's going to be great. And yeah, I guess I'll namaste these fools out of here, as Liam says. Namaste, everybody. Have a great week. I'll talk to y'all next week. Only in the night. It ain't about nothing. I'm straight hustling.